Good morning. This is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. I'm your host, Tim Morrison. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the book they have written, are in the process of writing, or intend to write someday. My usual co-host and producer, Stone Payton, is with his family, continuing their holiday vacationing. And Trevor Wolford is the producer again this week. Good morning, Trevor.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing well.
We're going to give you that powerful moment. You're the jazz guitarist. Tell people how they can be in touch with this great jazz guitarist.
That's right. I'll be playing around probably this coming couple next months. And my website is trevorwolford.com for more information and all the tour dates. They're all going to be up there. So
great. Great. Well, I'm glad you're with us to make us go out over the airwaves today. And I've asked Betsy Rain Miner, she's an independent contractor with Right Choice Services, to join me as co-host this morning. Good morning, Betsy.
Good morning, Tim. Thanks for having me.
It's a delight to have you here. Good holiday with the family.
Good holiday with the family. How about you?
It was a holiday. No, it was good. It was just good. Up and down the highway a lot. And I got to tell the world that sitting in to watch is Janet Litherland Barnes, who is the founder and editor emeritus of Right Choice Services. And it's just a delight to have her in here watching. And I'd like to have her talk, but she has refused to put a mic in front of her. So, well, for our first show in 2012, we have Linda Lehman-Masick and Bob Cashy as our guests. Linda has worked as an art teacher and librarian, but she says her true love is writing, and she has been writing professionally for over 20 years. Bob Cashy, you're a military vet. You held executive positions in some companies. Currently, you're a residential real estate agent.
That I am, yes.
Good. Well, 2 years ago, you began to write Panic to Passion, your personal story of overcoming debilitating bouts of anxiety, which sometimes struck multiple times a day. So what we have today is a seasoned writer and an emerging author, and our intent is to compare their experiences and approaches to writing to provide insight and encouragement to our listeners. And I'm going to begin with a brief conversation with each one of them, and then we're going to open it up and just have a general conversation. So we'll start with Linda, because I have ladies first policy on this show, and anyone who calls in gets to go first. And Linda is calling in from her home just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, where it's a balmy what and how much snow, Linda?
Well, it's like a balmy 18 or so. Oh. I think the high is supposed to be 21 today.
Oh, boy.
And we've got some snow on the ground, although it wasn't any 6 to 12. We're not in the snow belt. I'm about halfway between Cleveland and Akron, and it looks like there's maybe 2 to 3 inches down there. But the plow people are very happy. The ski people are dancing with joy up here because it's been warm. The birds and the animals look most unhappy. My rhododendrons are having a fit. They're all burned down because of the snow blowing around. But it's kind of blowing around out there right now. But there's supposed to be a let up around 12 o'clock, and then that's it.
That's good. Well, you were an art teacher, a librarian, and a professional writer. Tell us about that journey.
Well, my writing journey started really when I was in college. I went into teaching, and then I ended up getting a scholarship for an advanced degree to Case Western Reserve University, and ultimately I got a second advanced degree in history. And when I was getting the history degree, this was back in the 80s, in order to get an A for the course I was taking. Dr. Curie was the professor, and I needed an A on this course. And anyway, they were looking for somebody to write the Encyclopedia of Cleveland History.
Oh, my.
Which is a gigantic endeavor. Yes. Well, they needed some people who were willing to just make contributions. And like I said, I wanted an A for the course, and I thought, oh, boy, here's my chance. So I'd been doing some writing on and off. I'd had a couple of children's things published, and I'd been going to a writing class a couple times a month with Mrs. Marcella Anderson. She lived out in Pepper Pike. She's been kind of my mentor until she passed away about 6 years ago. Hmm. But at any rate, I wanted an A for this course, And I thought, what the heck? So I volunteered, and I wrote five or six of the entries in the encyclopedia. And it was published. As a matter of fact, it's now in its second edition. And it was really the first time. It's one of the books that I'm a co-author on, because my name, of course, is mentioned in the front and all this and that about it. Mm-hmm. And it really gave me a taste for book publishing, because prior to that, I had only been published in children's magazines, short stories and that kind of thing. And that was the first time. And then what happened was that... hello?
We're still here.
Oh, good. Okay. I'm holding my breath because the weather is kind of bad out there right now. But at any rate, that was the very, very first one. And then I was working full-time when I was writing, which is kind of a bad situation because you're doing it when you're tired as opposed to doing it, when that's all you have to think about. And what happened was that I went along for a while. I had some more articles published, and I decided to try a children's book because, like I said, my mentor, Mrs. Anderson, was a very, very encouraging.
Well, how did you go from writing part of the encyclopedia for Cleveland to writing children's stories and articles for magazines?
Well, actually, there's more of a connection than it sounds like because I'm a teacher, mm-hmm. and I teach children. I'm still doing it, as a matter of fact. I private tutor. And I teach at the local school. And so the children's part of it was kind of just an offshoot. You start messing around in class, writing this and that and what have you, and the next thing you know, you've got an article and it's published. And the same thing with the book. I had been looking at a lot of children's books, and I thought, oh, heck, I can write something like this. So I did. I wrote about a talking cat, and it was published, and it did extremely well. This is a Magnificat book. It's currently out of print, although you can do it on... you can find it on Amazon.
Okay.
There's copies available on Amazon. And our local bookstore here in Northfield has three brand new copies. I'm not sure where the owner dug them up, but she did. But there were an awful lot of those books floating around at one time, and I was doing book talks like crazy. Now, this was back in the 90s. I must have done, 30, 40 book talks.
You're dating yourself. You don't want to do that.
I know.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to shift over to Bob, get him in on our conversation, then bring us all together, okay?
Good, yes.
Okay, now, Bob is in our Alpharetta studio, and I'll bet you I know the answer to that. You're passionate about being passionate, correct?
I do have a passion for passion. Yes, that is correct. How did you pick up on that?
our conversations while you wrote your book, Panic to Passion. Yeah, it's ironic for me that you battled anxiety attacks, but you, which deals with intense emotions, but not of the positive sort. And so now you're all about passion and positive, and help our listeners understand that one.
It's like the other end of the spectrum. Panic disorder is very, very misunderstood, and it has a lot to do with a chemical imbalance. There are people that may have a panic attack or two in a year, and they're not necessarily chemically imbalanced. Mm-hmm. But when you have them for no good reason, and you have them frequently, which I did. I had them once, twice a day for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
They become very debilitating. You watch where you go. You watch what you do. You avoid certain locations because a panic attack occurred at that location. So,
so if you avoid it, it won't happen again.
Well, if you avoid it, you don't have the heightened sense of anxiety that, let's just say, one happens in a mall.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you're at North Point Mall,
mm-hmm.
and you have a full-blown panic attack, okay? And you learn that if you go back to North Point Mall, the level of anxiety that your body has gets to the point where it's very easy to trigger another full-blown panic attack.
Yeah.
So you learn to avoid. It's avoidance, and it's not a good thing. It's not a healthy thing.
Okay. Now, your book is a personal faith journey story, yet within the story is you encourage others to be passionate about their lives. Why do you encourage people to be passionate about their lives?
I somehow... I never had passion growing up. I just didn't know what that emotion was. And I think that after the 20 years of going through anxiety disorder, once I went through redemption, and I think God blessed me with this overabundance of passion, and having had it now, it's very hard for me to think about living without it, because it adds so much to your life when you have a purpose that ignites you.
Okay.
And
I like that. Yeah. I like that. Okay, with that, I'm going to bring you all in on this, and hopefully Betsy's going to chime in too, okay? Do you have a toss-up question you want to throw out there, Betsy?
I have a question that could be asked now.
Go for it.
Since you're both writers, you probably, I'm guessing, you read a lot. Have you read something recently that has made you think about the writing process differently?
We're on radio, folks. They can't see our faces.
I know. I'm just thinking.
Somebody do something here.
I'm reading probably one of the worst books I've ever read by Patterson. So I just can't believe he got it published. It's just not a good book that I like. But I think some things that I read recently from, let's say, Max Lucado, really focus in on the type of writing and the painting of a picture, which is when I first started writing, I wasn't doing. I was being very, very, very factual. Okay, this happened, then that happened, then this happened, as opposed to painting a picture so that people can imagine what you're saying, and it adds more flavor and character to the novel.
I like that. Linda, how about you?
Well, I've written for a couple of the writing magazines, Writer's Journal and Writer's Magazine, and then I also read a couple, and I get a lot of my writing ideas from there and how to do things. Now, when I read a lot because, well, I'm a librarian. I'm also a teacher, so I read a lot of professional things. But when I read for pleasure, I'm usually trying to read the sort of thing that I'm writing, which would be romantic suspense. I've got right now, I think, three or four books floating around out there besides the one that was just published, which was Soul Dance. But Fireside Press, which published Soul Dance, has another of my books, The Serpent Sea, which is another romantic suspense. And then besides that one, I'm currently revising a historical romance. Now, this is where the history part comes in, because I do have a degree in history, an advanced degree. And so a lot of what I write is historical in some sense, and a lot of what I read is historical. But we've got, we're currently revising a historical romance. And then besides that, I've got another book up at Avalon Press, Avalon Books published my second novel.
So what we're seeing here is the difference in writers. With Bob just coming out with your first book, you had it in you and you wrote it. And Linda is writing and writing and writing. Mm-hmm. Bob, do you have another book in you?
I really don't. Tim, at this point, I've had a lot of suggestions to actually go back and add a lot more meat to the first book. Mm-hmm. It's a bit thin, as you can tell, and I think I can bring a lot more to the story by just adding more color and picture painting.
Oh, let's play mind reader here. What's going through my mind, Bob, as you're saying this?
gee, I don't know, Tim. Tell me.
I was right.
Yes, you were.
Do you remember that initial exchange? I was working with Bob when he began to write this, and it is good. And he was talking about filled with passion, and I couldn't find the passion anywhere. And you came back on me, passion everywhere. And I said, no, but you found it. and it's in there, and it, and it's right, and that's part of what I want to lift up as the dichotomy between our two guests today. Linda, being the experienced writer, knows how to go about it, and she knows the research she needs to do. And you're learning to find that and mm-hmm. to recognize that what you think you've written may not exactly be what's on the page. And so you go back after it, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But understand that during the 20 years that I was in a black abyss, so to speak, mm-hmm. there was no passion. There was it was just living day to day. And hoping that I didn't have a frontal lobotomy and that I was eventually going to find out what was wrong with me. The doctors never knew. They couldn't tell me. They couldn't cure me. They couldn't do anything. And after that 20-year period, as the Lord allowed me to come out of this by giving of myself as much as He would give me healing, the more I would give Him of me, the more He gave me freedom to grow. And then He heaped my gift on me of passion, which was like, oh my gosh, what do I do with this?
And that can be scary, can't it?
It is scary because it's a great emotion, but you have to channel it, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
And not everything is things that you're passionate about. You may try this and say, well, you know, that's fine. I enjoyed it.
Right.
But guess what? I'm not really passionate about it. Right.
Well, let me throw another question out there. You know, Bob has said he thinks he may possibly maybe have a second book in the form of expanding the first one. Linda, you've got all kinds of books and magazines. Do you ever encounter writer's block or any similar kind of barrier when you write? And if so, how do you deal with it?
Oh, boy. Well, I think every writer has what they call dry periods of writing, and there's different ways you can work out of it. A lot of times, that was one reason, in a way, I'm glad I go back and forth between a number of different things, because one of the quickest ways I found to counter writer's block is to work on something else for a while. If I'm working on a book and I have a problem, what I try and do is rest my mind almost, and I rest it by working on some other kind of literature. Maybe I'll write for one of the journals. I've had a number of magazines that have published my work. I've got, I think, three historicals right now.
Well, you're kind of in an interesting position because you write so many genres and different kinds of things, so that if you get stuck, well, we'll just put that aside. What would you suggest to people who are not quite as experienced as you and don't have as wide-arching opportunities to get through that, oh, my God, I don't know what to do next?
Well, the one thing I wouldn't do would be just sit there and think about it, because the more you think about it, the worse it gets. What I would try and do, I think, it'd be go and do something else for a while, but don't just stare at a computer screen or stare at a yellow legal pad, because people start to get kind of, I don't know, panicky. You know, they can't.
Sort of like a panic attack, huh, Bob?
In a way, yes.
Absolutely.
No, it's kind of similar, because in a way you're terrified you can't write, and because you're terrified you can't write, you can't. And that's what sometimes I think, just rest your mind and get away from it, and try writing different things rather than just sticking with one particular kind of book or one particular kind of journal. Try and branch out a little bit. If it doesn't work in one place, why play around with it a little bit and send it someplace else. This is what I do even now. Okay. If I get a rejection, people are so devastated by rejections. Well, what I do is usually tweak the thing around a little bit and send it out again. I mean, I'm doing this with three or four projects right now, and it's almost a nonstop mm-hmm. kind of thing. And I think it helps stave off the writer's block problem, because your mind is always thinking. It's not like it's frozen.
I can, you know,
good.
Go.
Betsy's
sitting here. I can see she has a question.
Well, I was just about to ask Linda, and I think you've just covered some of this, but so maybe we'll give Bob a chance to answer. It's the new year. Surely there are people out there who have decided 2012 is the year they're going to write their first book. Bob, what would you tell someone who is just about to start this process for the first time?
Wow. Having only done one, that's a tough question, but let me see if I can answer it. I would make sure that they fully understand what they're about to write about and that they do the proper investigative work to be able to write the book and write it factually, that they find a good editor. And
He did look at me when he said that, folks.
Absolutely. And just take it day by day. Just to play off one of the other questions earlier about, you know, what do you do during the dry times?
Mm-hmm.
For me, the dry times came because of the pain of what I was writing about. I would write about something that occurred during that lost 20-year period, and then that instance would remind me of something else that I had long since buried, and it was like, oh no, I can't go there. I really can't. There's too much pain. I'd have to get up and walk away from the computer.
And you did, but then I also would make you go back, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I would go back, but at that point, I needed to get away from the pain because it brought back memories that have long since been buried, and it wasn't a fun thing. It was a very, very difficult journey for me.
But you've been able to touch lives because of it.
Tim, I have to some degree. I'm getting some very, very good feedback on Facebook of people that have read my book all the way from Seattle to Miami. Hmm. Each one gleans something different from it, whether it's the spiritual aspect of it, whether it's the redemption aspect, whether it is the aspect of the anxiety disorder, and oh my gosh, my sister has that, and I let her read the book, and she really now is, she knows she's not alone anymore, because most people mask it. So
I'm going to, Trevor, is her mic on? I forewarned you. Jan, I need to do this to you. And she's having a panic attack as I do this.
she recovers very well, though. Yeah, don't worry.
I'm sure she's married to you. When Bob's talking, I'm remembering reading the book, and you played a vital role in his life when his apartment, was it the apartment that caught fire?
Yes.
And you walked him through a lot of that. What has it been like for you to watch Bob write about all of those things again? I guess what I'm drawing the comparison here is Linda has shared with us extensively how her background as a librarian and a teacher, and how that has gone into her writing. You're a real estate agent. What are you doing writing a book?
Yes.
But you were there watching him along the way. What was that like for you, Jan? And talk directly into the microphone.
Wow. Well, Bob was my best friend now for over 30 years. And so as I saw him go through this, it was difficult. It was difficult. I didn't know in the beginning that he was suffering from panic disorder. He did a wonderful job of masking it for many, many years. And that had to be hard for him, too. He was my best friend, and so I tried to be there for him as he was going through it. I saw the difficulty of him writing the book and going through it, but I think it was also a catharsis.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was something that really helped him put it on paper, and I can see that it's also working for other people when they read it and they say, yes, that was me too.
Mm-hmm. So you've just mentioned, Bob, that you're a real estate agent.
Yes.
Has this book played into your professional life on that end at all?
No, I've always, this is my second attempt at being an entrepreneur, and leaving the corporate lifestyle is a good thing to do whenever your hair turns gray, right, Tim?
Yep, mine hadn't even gotten there yet, but it is there now.
Salt and pepper, I can see
yes,
it.
Yes, yes, yes.
And Jan and I just got together and said, you know, we rode the Lucent Technology Avaya horse all the way up the ladder and part the way down the ladder. And now it's time for us to do something on our own. So really the real estate thing was a totally separate decision for us. It was something that we could take further down the road and be able to use it to supplement ourselves at our own leisure, so to speak, so that we could work at our own pace, whether it was 9 days a week or whether it was 2 days a week. Mm-hmm. We could do whatever we wanted. That was the deal. And that's why we did that. So I think it's totally separate from the real estate scenario, totally.
It can be, but let me suggest for free. You're the real estate agent, though, that writes about passion.
Yes.
And you take that passion into your work.
Oh, I do.
And you can share your book with your clients, which you should.
Well, actually, that I do.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Hey, Linda, we haven't forgotten you. Let's run Betsy's question by you. People who are looking at 2012 made the resolution, this is the year to write a book.
Okay.
What would you tell them?
Well, first of all, I would tell them to read a lot of what is out there. Find out what is currently selling and what is out there. Because if you want to get an agent and an editor interested, you need to show that you have a certain marketability. And don't write something, you know, that there's no market for. What you want to do, and the only way you can find out what people are reading is to look around, go into the bookstore, into the library, check the bestsellers list, and then write not just what you know, but what you like. Don't ever try and write something, a type of book, if you don't like it, because it won't work.
Yep.
If you
don't
like
that's a different kind of passion.
Huh? Yeah. If you don't like murder mysteries, then don't try and write one. You're wasting your time. Same thing with a romance. If you're not a type of person that reads romances, then never try and write one, because you won't be successful. And what you need to do is kind of select what you like to read, and you know, just look. When somebody tells you, well, go pick something out to read, well, you pick. It's that simple, because you'll be picking what you like. This is what you want to lean toward writing. And then check the market, find out whatever's out there, and then read like crazy everything that people have recently, within the last year or two, written. And then from that point on, what I would do is, I know when I'm writing cold, what I try and do is write 1,000 words a day. And when I write my 1,000 words, I'm done for the day. It doesn't matter if I do it in an hour or if it takes me 8 hours.
And that's about 4 pages, right?
Right. Yeah, give or take, yeah. Because you get about 300 on a page with a computer.
Well, and you know what we have here, and it's a very fascinating perspective for me, and you probably picked up on it, Betsy. We've got Linda, who writes fiction. Mm-hmm. And we've got Bob, who writes nonfiction. And I know, Linda, you've done some nonfiction, but the approach is just fascinating. Bob would sit here and say, find something you're passionate about and write about it.
Absolutely. That's what I was thinking. If you can't be passionate about it,
don't even attempt to write about it. And I got
to
tell our listeners that the other Janet is sitting over there just ever so thankful that there is not a microphone in front of her, because I would be all over her on this question, because she's written all of that stuff and then some more. But I would encourage people to go to, what is it, JanetLitherland.com and see all the books that she's written. And she's done an amazing job with that. What intrigues me, Linda, with what you said in terms of reading, and Betsy, you asked that question. Mm-hmm. That was a good one. Standard understanding in writing is, if you're going to be a writer, sorry, Bob, you've got to be a reader. If you really want to write seriously, you need to read. The other thing is, if you listen carefully, Linda said, whatever it is you want to write, go read about that. And what that suggests is there really is nothing new coming out in terms of anything that's written. Mm-hmm. What is new is each of our perspective on what it is that we write.
Right. Very good.
Oh, thank you. What else do you want to throw out for them?
Very prophetic.
Let's see. This question is for Linda.
Yes.
Since you've got all of the writing experience, you've done different kinds of writing. Have any of your writing habits changed in all the years you've been doing this?
Not really, because, I've always written and worked at the same time. I still do. It's not like I just write for a living. I don't. I'm currently teaching, and I've got a number of other things that I do besides just the writing. And that's always really been the case with me, because I worked in a library for years, and I would write when I came home at night or early in the morning. And that really basically hasn't changed that much. Mm-hmm. Normally when I'm working on a book, I try for 1,000 words a day, and when I hit my 1,000, I'm done. Now, the articles and things are a little bit different. Mm-hmm. With the article, a lot of times I start with the research, because a lot of the articles are nonfiction. As a matter of fact, most of them are. And I start with the research, and I collect the research, and usually the articles are something under 1,000 words, so I can usually do those at one sitting, at least some kind mm-hmm. of a rough draft. Mm-hmm. And then I go back and I check all the facts and everything to be sure everything is right and all the names are spelled properly.
Linda, earlier you had mentioned that you've written for a writer journal.
Yes.
Tell our listeners a little bit. I just love that magazine, and Leon Ogronsky, he's a great guy. How did you get to write for them?
What had happened, I was shopping around an article, and it was how to get an agent. And I sent it to Writer's Journal, and they liked my article, and they published it. And then
I make that sound so easy.
She does.
Well, no, actually it wasn't, because I had been writing for quite a while when uh-huh. this happened. And like I said, it was about getting an agent and how to get an agent interested in you, this kind of thing.
So you're living, breathing proof of the fact that if you're a writer, you have to love rejection, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes, you get a lot.
I'm familiar with that.
Oh, yes. It's almost nonstop, because it's one of the things that's really hard to deal with. But the thing of it is, you get something back, and you tweak it around, and you send it out again. It's that simple. You don't dwell on it, because if you dwell on it, you get too discouraged and depressed. So you just, start playing around with it. And that's one of the good things today. There are many, many markets for things. And when you send out something and it's rejected, you always have to try and remember. It might not be you. It's not you personally. It might not even be the article.
It may not stick, but we'll find a place for it to mm-hmm. stick, right, eventually?
Well, it might just be that it's not what the editor happens to be looking for at the time. And I know I'm currently writing a newspaper column, too. This started about 6 months ago for the local paper. And, of course, I'm always shopping around for local news. And it's really amazing, in a way, the way things kind of fit together, because of my history background, the novels, and a lot of the magazine articles that I write are historical.
Well, it just all comes together. And
it does, because
And Bob understands that, too, because he never intended to write, and he did. And mm-hmm. Betsy's waving at mm-hmm. me again.
I am. Linda mentioned just a minute ago, Bob, that because she was working full-time during the day, her writing time was early in the morning, late at night. When you were working on your book, was there a certain time of day that was either the time of day that fit best into your schedule, so you had to write then, or did you have some freedoms to choose the time that was best for you?
in real estate, you do have a lot of freedom to move your time around, mm-hmm. Unless you have a client appointment. And, of course, real estate comes first. And it's those paperwork times that you can jump on the computer and bang out 500 words or 1,000 mm-hmm. words or whatever. But it really, I tried not to write late at night mm-hmm. because of the fatigue issue. And I liked writing first thing in the morning because of the freshness of it. But I did it around the job that pays, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Good.
Well, Linda, if people want to be in contact with you or ask you about writing or get some writing hints, how would they best be in touch with you?
Well, my email address, of course, is masekle@windstream.net. Now, that probably would be the easiest way, just send me an email.
Mm-hmm.
And
your books are available where?
And okay, now the books are available. Well, the Magnificat book is the one that's out of print. Now, that's the mm-hmm. children's Christmas book. And that one is currently available only on Amazon. Now, the other two, Poison Tree was the second one. That one is available from the publisher, which is Avalon Books. They're all available from Amazon.
Okay.
And also, that is still in print, so you can order it from any bookstore. It can be ordered if Barnes & Noble or whoever.
It better be Barnes & Noble because Border isn't out there anymore.
I was going to say
Borders. Unless you have a special agreement with them. I don't know.
No, Borders is long gone in our area.
Okay.
And then the last one, Soul Dance, can be ordered from Fireside Books or, again, from any bookstore can order it for you again because the jobbers do carry all these.
Okay. Bob, if people want to be in touch with you, learn about what it was like for you to write beyond what you've shared with us or even to get a copy of your book, what do they do?
Absolutely. If they have any questions, I would love to hear from people and I will answer every email. My email address is B, as in Bob, Cashy, and that's with a K-A-S-H-E-Y, @comcast.net. And I would welcome anybody that has issues with either anxiety disorder, depression, panic attacks, because I know how lonesome they feel. I know mm-hmm. how much they mask it and try and hold it in. And if they have issues on the faith journey that I went through, that would also be interesting. But any questions, I would absolutely urge you to sit down and jot me an email.
Okay, great. Well, you know, the clock is on us. Just happens every show that we do. And we welcome your comments and suggestions about the content and about our guests. And if those of you who are listening would like to recommend a guest or be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. And I'd ask you to send us an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Thank you, Trevor, for handling the controls for us, and thank you, Betsy, for co-hosting.
Thanks for having me.
It's been a delight to have you beside me. Janet, you got to watch me in action. Learn about her books at janetlitherland.com. And thanks to our guests, Linda Lehman-Masick and Bob Cashy. Linda, one more time, short, simple contact information.
Okay, my email is masekle@windstream.net. Anybody would like to send me an email, I would be happy to answer. And like I said, anybody wants the books, Amazon has them all, local bookstore or Avalon or Fireside Books.
Great. And Bob, your contact information one more time.
B as in Bob, Cashy with a K, K-A-S as in Sam, H-E-Y @comcast.net. And the books are available through Amazon, both as an ebook and as a hard copy.
Okay.
And we are doing a lot of signings locally here in Atlanta. There are 4 or 5 family Christian bookstores that are carrying it.
That's Lifeway, pretty much, right?
No, actually, Cross Books is okay. owned by Lifeway, and Lifeway has it as well.
Okay.
But Family Christian Bookstores has more of a presence in Atlanta.
Okay, so. Great. Well, Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services, and you can learn more about Right Choice Services at www.right, that's W-R-I-T-E, choiceservices.com. I hope you will join us next week, and I encourage you to tell your friends about the show. Send them an email, even right now, to invite them to listen live or to the downloads. Right Here, Right Now broadcasts live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. at righterherightnow.businessradiox.com, and the MP3 version is available later today. I am Tim Morrison. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business right here, right now.